This is Gulf Coast Life. I'm Mike Canary. Thanks for joining us. Bertha Vasquez spent 34 years in the classroom teaching middle schoolers in Miami-Dade County. Since retiring in 2023, she's been the Director of Education at the Center for Inquiry. It was founded in 1976 by the likes of Carl Sagan and Isaac Asimov to investigate what they called extraordinary claims being made about things like paranormal activity and UFO abductions, things that fall into the category of pseudoscience. As Director of Education, Ms. Vasquez heads up the Center's Teacher Institute for Evolutionary Science, which provides teachers with materials to teach the theory of evolution, as well as their programs Science Saves and Generation Skeptic, which help younger people understand the positive aspects of scientific advancement and help them remain skeptical in the face of extraordinary claims, especially now that we're flooded with new information that may very well fall into that category. She was in Southwest Florida last weekend to give a talk at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Greater Naples that took attendees on a time-traveling journey from the late 1700s to present day, highlighting the scientific discoveries that have improved people's lives, things like how close to half of all children died before their fifth birthday in the year 1800, before we had things like municipal water systems, germ theory, antiseptics, hand soap, antibiotics, smallpox vaccines, etc., all things that came out of scientific inquiry. I spoke with her last week. Let's hear that conversation now. Bertha Vasquez, welcome back to Gulf Coast Life.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So we had you on the show about 2 years ago exactly, so we don't need to spend as much time on your origin story as we did back then. For listeners, I will link that conversation from 2 years ago on the web post for this show. But give listeners a sense of your background and sort of story arc as a science educator to lay some groundwork.
Sure. I taught science in Miami-Dade County Public Schools at a wonderful middle school, George Washington Carver Middle School, for the majority of my career. I was there for 33 of those 34 years. I loved it. And back 10, actually 11 years ago now, I started working part-time for the Center for Inquiry. At the time, it was the Dawkins Foundation for Reason and Science. They have since merged. And it was all about helping teachers teach evolution in an engaging, effective way by giving them content and resources. Since then, I've retired. So June 2023 was my last year in the classroom. Yes, I miss the students. It's nice to be around middle school kids. They keep you young. But I am now full-time with the Center for Inquiry, and we've added two more programs, Science Saves and Generation Skeptics, along with the original Teacher Institute for Evolutionary Science.
Before we talk about the stuff that you do directly, give listeners a sense of the, or just a short version of the origin story of the Center for Inquiry.
Oh, wow. So very cool. The Center for Inquiry was founded. This is our 50th anniversary. Okay, so it was founded 50 years ago, 1976, by none other than Carl Sagan and the likes of Isaac Asimov and Paul Kurtz. And it was founded as a reaction to kind of the misinformation of the 1970s. We had people on TV saying, claiming that they could bend spoons. And there was a lot of Bigfoot sightings. There were a lot of Bigfoot sightings. And there were UFO sightings. And we talked about things like the Bermuda Triangle and ESP. There were faith healers on TV that were taking money from people fraudulently. So these gentlemen got together and said, hey, we need a nonprofit foundation that investigates extraordinary claims. So they, you know, the Center for Inquiry investigates. If you say you have a haunted house, if you say you've seen Bigfoot, or if you say your homeopathic products work, we're just going to very impartially investigate your claims. And as Carl Sagan said, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence.
How long have you been aware of it, or were you aware of it? In other words, it's been around for 50 years. You were in middle school classrooms. Were you aware of it before you started working with them in 2015?
No, I did not. And they didn't have a very well-developed education program. So as a teacher, I would not have used anything in my classroom because there really were no resources. Although James Randi Foundation did have an education toolkit for teachers, but I was not aware of that. And he's the gentleman who is famous for debunking Uri Geller and his spoon bending and debunking some faith healers and stuff. So no, I was not aware of it till 2015.
Hmm. So now go into a little bit more detail about, you know, the programs that you facilitate as Director of Education.
Sure. So in 2015, it was actually the Richard Dawkins Foundation for Reason and Science that asked me to found the Teacher Institute for Evolutionary Science. We started the program. It was just me here in Miami, Florida. We said, okay, what do teachers need to effectively teach this wonderful topic? And I started developing workshops for teachers, reaching out to different school districts, writing lessons. My goal was to give the teachers a ready-to-go unit and ready-to-go resources, all free, so they could go back into the classroom with good, solid content. Because, you know, you teach best what you know best on evolution. It went very well. The first couple years, we had over 40 workshops around the country. I believe in 2017, the Dawkins Foundation merged with the Center for Inquiry. And then in 2022, we brought on Science Saves. It's just such a wonderful foundation. It's all about promoting gratitude for everything our fellow humans who do science have done for us. You know, you could say everything science has done for us, but I like to stress the human side of science, the fact that, you know, it's humans that have given us this wonderful legacy of innovation and health and longer lives. And so that program includes a scholarship for high school seniors. It includes promoting National Science Appreciation Day on March 26th, because that's the day that in 1953, Jonas Salk announced his successful polio vaccine trials. And it includes all the teacher resources that I have on the Science Saves page for K-12 education.
And then Generation Skeptics.
Oh, yes. Sorry. So Generation Skeptics is our third program, started in August of 2023. And that program is really the true Center for Inquiry program, because what it does is address misinformation. It gives teachers the tools to teach kids how to identify misinformation, which is getting harder and harder to do. And also, like, what are the different types of misinformation? And very importantly, something that we all miss, why we as humans tend to fall for misinformation. Because the key to identifying misinformation, knowing you're being duped, is intellectual humility, knowing that you can fall for misinformation. And we all can. And that's the third program. And we also have tons of lessons there on everything from, you know, optical illusions to the multi-billion-dollar wellness industry to aliens.
You know, it's being willing to know what you don't know and admit it to yourself.
Yes. And one of the things I do when I present for Generation Skeptics is I have at least five examples in the presentation, which is about a 45-minute presentation, of how I have fallen for misinformation. And in some cases, just last year. And it's not uncommon, and you have to be aware that you fall for it, and it's okay to be wrong. That's step one to protect yourself from misinformation.
And, you know, being willing to be wrong is at the root of science itself, right?
Absolutely. I always stressed in the classroom, and I stress when I give teacher workshops now, scientists do not set up experiments to prove themselves right. They set up experiments to prove themselves wrong.
I think you could lump extraordinary claims made in the 70s in the category of misinformation to some degree. But can you imagine how much different the mission of Generation Skeptics would be in a world without social media?
Yes, social media has made this problem much, much worse for a number of reasons. First of all, you had that one person somewhere in, I don't know, Florida, let's say, because that's where we are, who thought that the aliens landed in Roswell. And everybody else kind of looked at him and smiled and patted him on the shoulder. But now that gentleman can go online and find a whole community of people that think the aliens landed in Roswell. So it's much easier to find your tribe. And B, with the way social media works and the algorithms that are involved and the identity, the minute that a belief becomes my identity, it's much harder to separate myself from that belief. And that way social media works, they understand that too. So yes, social media has definitely made this problem much, much worse. Ironically, I think young people are more likely to question what they're seeing because they've grown up in this era. Whereas older people, I'd say 30s, 40s, 50s plus, are more likely to fall for the misinformation they see online because they automatically believe it.
I was going to bring this up later in the show, but, you know, now in light of the ability to create pictures and video that are effectively not discernible as fake, easy for anyone to make, that's just a huge vector for problems with people believing things, right?
Yeah. And the thing is that you can't just throw out the baby with the bathwater. You can't go, well, everything's fake. Everything's fake news. That's a very bad position. What we have to teach people is to be, I like to say, skeptical thinkers, not just critical thinkers. Skeptical thinkers. And like I said earlier, that begins with yourself. When you see new information, you ask yourself, why do I want to believe this? Or why do I not want to believe this? Very likely it might align or disalign with your political beliefs or your religious beliefs. So you first try to figure out why you want to believe something. And then you start, what you have to do is a lateral search. You have to get out of that information and go online and say, is this true? Is this a hoax? Start from there. Start with the idea that you're going, and also be aware that when you look for the facts, you have something that's called motivated reasoning. You're likely to find the websites and the facts that align with your initial belief. We don't, you know, facts don't really matter. It's more about what we identify with, what we believe, what our parents and our tribes, be whatever they are, have told us to believe. So the first step, and I know I've stressed this twice already, but the first step is to really say, why do I want to believe this or why do I not want to believe this? And the most difficult instances for me to realize I was wrong were when I realized that my own tribe was incorrect about a given topic. And that's it's a very difficult, painful almost thing to come up and realize.
Yeah, you have to be strong in, you know, feeling like you're going to be disconnected from something that you feel like you are a part of and rely upon.
Yes, and to hark back to my first program with Center for Inquiry, that's the Teacher Institute for Evolutionary Science, we call it TIES, that falls perfectly in line with our evolutionary history as humans. We evolved in a hunter-gatherer tribes, and your tribe was very, very important to you. They provided you with warmth and comfort and safety and food, and being rejected from your tribe meant isolation, loneliness, and possibly death, right? So it is very difficult for us to go, wow, I guess we're kind of wrong about that. My belief system is wrong. It's a very difficult process. It's so ingrained in our history as humans.
I'd like to take a moment to reintroduce my guest. Bertha Vasquez is a lifelong science educator. She taught middle school in Miami-Dade County for 34 years before retiring in 2023. She's been director of education at the Center for Inquiry and director of its Teacher Institute for Evolutionary Science since retiring from the public school classroom. If you'd like to engage with the show about this topic, find us on WGCU social media. We are on Instagram and Facebook. So I went back and listened to the conversation we had 2 years ago, and toward the end of it, we touched on the rise of anti-science, anti-expert sentiment. I think you would agree that it's fair to say that there's been an uptick in that since last we talked, right?
Sadly, yes.
What are your thoughts on that? And from the perspective of the Center for Inquiry, is that something that, you know, it's like we have extraordinary claims being made from the very top now?
Yes. And I think a big part of it is what I call, or what is the term, is generational amnesia. Hmm. We are victims of our own success. Why should I vaccinate my child against a disease I've never heard of? That is a direct quote from somebody I watched being interviewed on TV. We successfully eradicated diseases like smallpox. We close to eradicated diseases like polio and measles. We've brought down other diseases, especially in the United States, like tuberculosis. And so people don't see it. And so they don't realize how successful humans have been in making each other's lives healthier and really just more free time and longer. Think about the fact, just the other day, so I, in my presentation at the Universalist Unitarian Church in Naples, I'll be talking about raw milk and raw water. Have you heard of these, Mike?
You know, I definitely have heard of raw milk, and I recently came across, I don't know, raw water was not the way I heard it described, but I think we're talking about the same thing. It's like water that's molecules are aligned differently.
Just water that hasn't been boiled. Water that's just taken from...
Oh, that's different. There's a different... There's also a different kind of water whose molecules are aligned differently. Anyway, continue.
Well, that makes me wonder. It sounds like an extraordinary claim. I'm not quite sure how you would take H2O molecules and align them differently unless you freeze it.
Oh, Google that sentence with the Florida Surgeon General and start there. So continue.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. But see, I can't keep up with it all. But it just means it's natural. Don't boil your water. And I read a book called An Extra Life by Adam Johnson, and he breaks down innovations, discoveries that have saved lives. He breaks it into millions of lives saved, for example, seatbelts, hundreds of millions of lives saved, antibiotics, and billions of lives saved. There's only three things in history that have saved billions of lives. And one of them is sanitation, separating your poop water from your drinking water and your cooking water. And the idea that people are now thinking it's natural to drink raw water or raw milk, just the idea that, ironically, on the raw milk page, which is milk that hasn't been pasteurized, it says, we recommend you boil this milk before you drink it, which is funny because that's exactly what pasteurization does. But just last week, I did the same talk in L.A., and a former student who's now 35 years old came to L.A. to see my talk, and she told me about free birth and wild pregnancy. Have you heard about this?
I can sort of suss what you're getting at, but no, tell me more.
So wild pregnancy means go through pregnancy with no checkups, no doctor's visits, no scans, nothing. Free birth means have birth at home without the presence of a medical professional, no midwives, no nurses, no doctors. And it started by two influencers on Instagram. They are responsible for the deaths, as you can imagine, of dozens of women at least. And I don't think they can be held legally responsible for these deaths. So to circle back, all of the anti-science misinformation out there, I think a big part of it has to do with our generational amnesia. We forgot what it's like to give birth before midwives and sanitation and hospitals in case of any medical emergency that may arise. We've forgotten what it's like for our babies to die of cholera and unpasteurized milk. And we've forgotten what it's like for our babies to die of measles. And it's very, very sad.
And you know, you can't know what another person's thinking, but I think that there's probably a fair percentage of people who put these things out who are only doing it for engagement. You know what I mean? They're not necessarily doing it because, like, they believe it deep down inside, but they know that they'll get lots of clicks and that kind of feeds their online ego or whatever.
And add to that the fact that in 2023, I believe it was identified that over a third of Twitter accounts, X accounts, were bot generated accounts. So this person may not even be a person. And that, you know, a lot of those accounts are rage bait type accounts. They want to stir the pot. It's a lot easier to destroy our country by polarizing us and making us think we're very different from each other and pointing our fingers at the other. It's a lot easier than to invade, you know, militarily. Let us destroy each other from within. We really, really need to start listening to each other, I think, and stop demonizing the other.
Do you use any AI tools or large language models?
I do.
What do you find the beneficial uses of them?
So, for example, today I received a lesson from a teacher on teaching Animal Farm, the book, instead of through the traditional way of teaching it about history and fascism, et cetera, teaching it through the lens of modern misinformation.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's a, it'll be posted on the website probably by the end of the week. It's, of course, mainly for language arts teachers, high school. But anyway, she sent me this beautiful lesson, but I like to have lesson plans that can be downloaded with every lesson because, I mean, moment of honesty, I never really used the lesson plans and I could have taught for 34 years without them, but the administrators want to see those lesson plans and it's part of your annual evaluation when they walk into your classroom. So I went to ChatGPT and I put in all her notes for this lesson, which is the important part, right? But I put, please create a lesson plan for high school English, include the national standards on this topic. Boom. And it just did it for me. And then it says, would you like to create a pacing guide? Yeah, sure. Give me a pacing guide. And it said, would you like some sample answers and a rubric for the student questions? Yeah, sure. Give me the sample answers and the rubric. So it's very helpful in that sense.
I just recently reread Animal Farm. I would be interested to see that lesson plan and think back through it through its lens.
Yes. I sat in the teacher's classroom while they were going over when the pigs, if you recall the book, when the pigs were telling the other farm animals that they didn't actually see what they saw when the animals first revolted. And I got chills.
I've been rereading a lot of those old books lately, and they're all very chilling.
Boy, George Orwell, what a guy. He just had such a vision.
You know, we talked about the, you know, the rise of anti-science sentiment and how we're seeing policy stuff coming from the very top. Can you imagine evolution is fake news, quote unquote, coming on the horizon anywhere?
It's the same old story of it's just a theory, teach alternative theories, let the kids decide under the guise of academic freedom. Those issues are still out there. However, the national middle school and high school standards on evolution in just the last 10 years have improved considerably. For example, our state has really, really strong middle and high school evolution standards.
And those have remained in place in recent years?
So far, so good.
So 34 years in the classroom, you did sort of brush past how you do kind of miss it. I mean, can you imagine being back in that world or is that just a part of your life you look back on fondly?
I just look back on it fondly because of the use of cell phones in the classroom and the way kids use AI. I was known as a nice teacher, firm but friendly, and I might have become an ogre because I was very close to throwing a cell phone against the wall on a number of occasions before I retired. I spearheaded a program in my school where we just no cell phones, period. And I think that's now a district policy here. I assume it's probably a district policy where you are because you just cannot teach when they have cell phones on their desk. I don't care how exciting you are. You could be the funniest, best comedian on the planet. They're going to be looking at their phones. That's something that I don't know how my fellow teachers are dealing with. And the AI. You know, I had ways to go around plagiarism. There's always been kids copying, right, off the internet and books before that. But now with AI, for example, I had a lesson on alternative energy. But all the guiding questions I gave them, they had to pick a form of alternative energy. And they had to write it all in first person. Hi, I'm solar energy. I come from the sun. Let me explain how I work. And I did that, so they had to change what they were learning, what they were taking notes on, into their own words. But today, you could just go to ChatGPT or whatever and go, here are these questions, answer them for solar energy in first person. My whole lesson would have been in the trash can.
Yeah.
So the only thing you can do as a teacher is have them work paper and pencil in the classroom. And I know a lot of my fellow teachers, the older ones, the young ones are really, you know, I think they embrace the computer age, but I could be wrong. They are going back to paper and pencil to make sure that kids are thinking on their own.
Hmm. Well, we are unfortunately out of time. I hope your talk on Saturday goes well. Bertha Vasquez is Director of Education at the Center for Inquiry and Director of its Teacher Institute for Evolutionary Science. Ms. Vasquez, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
If you go to our website, wgcu.org/GCL, you can listen to our conversation from February of 2024 when we talked more in depth about her path to the Center for Inquiry and her friendship with Richard Dawkins and his coining the term meme in the modern context. That was when she was in Southwest Florida to give a talk titled Don't Believe Everything You Believe. Her talk this time happened last Saturday, so it is unfortunately too late to attend. Our show today was produced by yours truly with technical assistance from Jared Gonzalez. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Mike Canary. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.